Man United 3, Brighton and Hove Albion 0.
Easy. I'm not having three though. I'm not having it. I just don't. It doesn't count double for Welbeck. Doesn't.
It doesn't count double. Counts for us.
No. Doesn't even count for
Carrington,
us.
Carrington 3, Brighton and Hove Albion 0. Carrington 3, rest of the world 0. How's that?
Yeah. The thing with Welbeck is, and I know I tease you about him dreaming to play for Arsenal. He only envisaged it.
Yeah, it's not the same. Unlike Ravel.
It's not quite the same. We'll get on to Ravel later, I think. So, you know, okay, I'll give him that. But he scored about 1 in 5. So he got about 40 goals in 200 odd appearances for United. He has like a better than 1 in 2 scoring record when he plays us.
Yes, well, he's motivated because Louis van Gaal broke his heart and he's trying to fix it. One enthusiastic goal celebration at the Stretford end at a time.
Yeah. Oh, dear.
No. I mean, that was a slog, wasn't it?
Really?
Oh, hooray! We're almost certainly going to qualify for next season's Champions League.
Yes. Yay. I mean, look, it's a big, well done. It's a big win because it's 4 points ahead of Leicester, and what is it, 9 or 11 ahead of Liverpool?
11 ahead of Tottenham Hotspur, who are somehow fifth.
Right.
In the most confusing league table placement that's ever happened ever. Jose Mourinho's Tottenham Hotspur are somehow the fifth best team in this division.
Yeah, 8 games to go. I mean, United would really have to blow it big time to not make the Champions League trophy winners' shield. And, you know, so it looks like that's going to happen. Hooray, Glazers will get their dividend next year. And we won't have to record on a Thursday night, which is delightful. the two things that count.
More accurately, like, we will record on a Thursday night, but at a reasonable time, because that's what we tend to do when the Champions League's on.
Yeah, so there's that. That's all good. But yeah, it was hard work today. United just moved it so slow. And I mean, sure, there may be some fatigue. Quite a few players were away with the international teams, but not that many. And not all of them played the 3 games. In fact, I'm not sure any of them did, actually. And quite a few players were at Carrington training. So I just wondered what it was. You know, it shouldn't be fatigue, I don't think. They're just not playing well. There's no zip in the players, and there's definitely no zip in the manager's proactiveness when it came to changing the game.
I didn't really watch the post-match interview, but we just were setting up and he started talking and I turned the sound up on my telly and heard Des Kelly ask him, "What did you say at halftime?" The first words out of Solskjaer's mouth were, "Nothing tactical." And you're like, "Oh yeah, no, really? Oh, what a surprising development." I mean, I know we scored immediately after this, but the 81st minute Cavani off, Donny van der Beek on substitution was very, like, I don't know, on the nose for Solskjaer's approach to these things. Yeah, I mean, the big problem in this game was just that United's players, I mean, we could talk about tactics till we're blue in the face. I mean, Potter's Brighton, very well drilled, got back into position excellently time and time again, denied United space on the counter-attack, but also United's players really struggled to find each other with the ball. I mean, I haven't looked at the data, but sort of experientially, it felt like one of those games where we gave the ball away a lot.
Yes, Fred dispossessed, Fred misplaces pass, you know. That's his second name, isn't it? He felt criminal for it, but also Pogba. I mean, Pogba for Brighton's opening goal, gave the ball away, very casual pass, simple pass, couldn't make it. I think it was just the speed, though. United very static, as well as not making the passes, not making them quickly enough. So Brighton were able to fall back in stages, basically.
Yeah.
So and their plan almost worked. And if it wasn't for an absolutely brilliant finish from Marcus Rashford and, you know, a wonder ball from Shaw followed by some fortune, I don't think we'd have got away with this. I mean, that wasn't anything to do with United's strategy or tactics or substitutions, really, was it? It was just the details, which, of course, are important. But it felt like Brighton won the tactical battle but lost the game.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. And I think, you know, partly that speaks to the tactical battle can only go so far if there's a significant difference between quality of players on the two teams. And the thing that United are lacking is the thing that would benefit United tremendously, obviously, is a proper tactician as a manager. Solskjaer has got loads and loads and loads of things right about club culture, and although there's I got something to say about Solskjaer and cultural issues at some point on the show. Club culture and removing deadwood and blah, 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 blah. And we're going to finish second probably in the league. And we're certainly going to qualify the Champions League at a canter, which has been by no means any kind of guarantee in the post-Fergie era, obviously. But doesn't Arf feel like a coach that was a coach would be beneficial? All that said, this season in particular, there's a huge amount of difference between the time that Graham Potter has with his players and the time that Solskjaer has with his players on the training pitch. A gulf in that. United are getting, what, a couple of hours a week, you'd imagine, to do anything progressive in tactics that's not just about recovery or fitness.
Yes, I don't know what it is, but yeah, for sure. Yes, hardly any time. I mean, they have a big backroom staff, so they can do the preparation, obviously, but the time with the players is minimal because recovery is so important in this compressed season. And, sticking them for hours and on end in a video room looking at tactics would be very Jose-esque in a way of losing the players quite quickly. So, for sure, yeah, it's a difficult one from that point of view. But I just don't know if Ollie has it in the locker, because, you know, we see United struggling to adapt to other teams. And look, I hate to feel like sometimes this podcast feels like hard work, because it's hard to think of new things to say about this particular team, which is very true. And it's probably hard to say new things on this podcast, isn't it? And we've just won, and it's a massive victory in the context of the season and what United are trying to achieve. And United are second, have a very favourable draw in the Europa League, so got a really good chance of going far in that competition. You know, it's progress.
Definitely.
It's definitely progress. But we were some minor details away from losing this game. And then, you know, the conversation would be very different. And that's the frustrating thing. And look, not a huge amount is going to change this summer, without going too far ahead of myself here, because it's just, you know, United £200 million in the hole, basically, because of COVID. So it's going to be the same manager, the same backroom staff, and largely the same players next season. And you know, it just feels like, oh, how are we going to progress from here? That's going to be a challenge, you know, and maybe Solskjaer, maybe the club, I find it hard to look further forward than that right now because of where we are and what we're trying to achieve right now. It's going to be absolutely non-stop for the players from now until the end of July, and then the Premier League season.
Until the end of 22-23 season.
I mean, basically.
Oh, no, the World Cup's at Christmas, isn't it?
Well, World Cup's at Christmas, so they will get a break. In the summer of 2023.
In the summer of
22.
No, is it Christmas 2022?
Yeah, it's November.
The World Cup?
It's November and December 2022 is the World Cup.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So it's not this Christmas, obviously.
No,
it's
not this Christmas. So next Christmas. This summer, the Euros and Copa America and the Olympics. So somehow every single player in the United, you know, first team, reserves, academy, under 12s will be playing in a tournament this summer, and they'll get no break. They will only get their 30 days break if their team goes out early. You know, hi Gareth, or Solskjaer rests them for the beginning of next season. Great, so we get a slow start to next season. Anyway, we're getting ahead of our skis there. We had a game here. Can we talk about, you know, can we? Maybe we should roll ourselves back a little bit and talk about Brighton's opening goal, because that was a mess as well, let alone where United are going from 3 years from now.
Yeah, Pogba gave the ball away real nasty. The cross comes in, Lindelof leapt for it, Wan-Bissaka. I heard people having a real pop at Lindelof. I feel like Lindelof was just maybe half a step forward, and once the ball's over his head, he's just not in any position to do anything.
Yeah, I think his body shape's in the wrong way because his left shoulder is dipped, so he's the wrong way addressing the ball. Wan-Bissaka just lets... I mean, Danny Welbeck did him with movement. It's just... And he didn't look...
Hey, come on. Listen, I know you've had a hard day. I know we just watched that match, but let's not hurt each other's feelings.
It's very simple movement, you know, from out to in from Danny Welbeck. Yeah. And Lindelof, Wan-Bissaka, I've looked at this several times now, doesn't look once, not once, ever. Mm. And he's just stood there. And it's just criminal. It's just criminal. He's got to be expecting some movement. And he just wasn't.
This can lead us into a conversation, because I was just about to say Henderson didn't really do much wrong for that one. I mean, he gets the first one off and he can really do about the second one. It's not like he could have hit it sideways, but we should talk about the fact that Dean Henderson started this game, because this is the first game where you would say, okay, this is him being picked ahead of David De Gea, because obviously the two games after De Gea was back were the Europa League and the FA Cup, both of which you would expect Henderson to play in under normal order of business. This one, though, this is absolutely David De Gea being dropped in favour of Dean Henderson for a Premier League game.
For the first time. And it's a big statement, really. I mean, Henderson does well generally in this game. I mean, he dropped one cross in a field of players where he clattered into his own man. It's not great. It's not great, but he's trying to catch the cross. I mean, David De Gea would have flapped limp-wristedly at it. I mean, I didn't see it because obviously not at the game, but the comms was talking about their warm-ups, and the warm-ups were, as anyone who goes to games will know, they go through this routine, goalkeepers before the game, they'll have, long-range shooting practice, short-range shooting practice, and a lot of crossing typically. And apparently De Gea was trying to punch them all and Henderson was catching them all. And it's kind of a statement of approach from the two players there, isn't it? You know, so I don't blame Henderson for going for a difficult one. It could have been really nasty. And apart from that, I don't think he's made any other mistakes. Couldn't do anything about the goal. And this is Solskjaer saying that he's the number one now, I guess, until he makes a big rick.
Yeah, and the thing about it is that cross is almost like not even the noteworthy one. It could have been really serious, but just a number of times. There's one in particular where he came through. They were targeting him in a very direct way, swarming him essentially, and he got through in a way that, you know, De Gea wouldn't have got off his line in a million years. There's something quite reassuring. I mean, this feels very proper football man to be like, oh, isn't it nice having a keeper who comes off his line, when David De Gea has, you know, redefined the art of the reflex save. You know, there's probably never been a goalkeeper who's better at reflex saves on the line than David De Gea, and his strengths more than compensated for his weaknesses for a large swathe of his career, but just not sure that's the case anymore. And, you know, I'm not saying he's finished, but you're not crying out for him to play over Henderson, are you?
No, that's right. I mean, now Henderson's had, what, six or seven games in a row. He's been fortunate, I suppose, that De Gea, De Gea's wife had a baby, and so he was out of action for a little while, and it's given Ollie the excuse as well. And now it's Henderson's shirt, and he's going to have to make a mistake for De Gea to get back in, I imagine. Unless De Gea plays the Europa League games, because they've, you know, swapped roles. It'll be interesting to see if that happens. That would be quite pointed, wouldn't it? I don't know whether... Yeah. I don't think he'll do that. I think Henderson will play all of them. Just because, you know, I know Henderson has been the Europa League player, but it would be rubbing salt into David De Gea's wounds, wouldn't it? So,
Unless the idea is to get him some match time, because he hasn't played a match for a good long while, De Gea.
So I guess so.
You play him in against Granada to say, okay, play well here and you can reclaim your number one spot, kind of thing.
Yeah, I believe he went away with the Spain squad, but didn't play any of the... Simon has been playing at Atletico Bilbao, goalkeeper. So, yeah, I mean, Henderson went away with England and didn't play any of the games, did he? I don't think. Yeah, Nick Pope played them all, which is interesting, because Nick Pope's weakness is with his feet, because he's dreadful with his feet. You can just see England quarterfinal. Pope passes it out to, pick a player who scores the winner. Interesting. So, Dean Henson, lots to work on, but, a positive work in progress. And we'll see. I don't expect United to have budget for a goalkeeper this summer. They'd have to get their hair off the books, which is going to be super difficult. So,
well, this is not a conversation we need to have. That's not a thing that's going to happen, is it? The rest of the team selection, I was quite excited, actually. Pogba in midfield and, Cavani, Greenwood, Rashford. But the problem is, Rashford looked half-cooked for almost all the game.
He's not fit. He's
clearly got these injury problems, and he scored a brilliant goal, as has been the case all season. Just Rashford's season, not playing that well, scoring brilliant goals. Cavani looked completely off the pace. Martial, who played quite well for France, really nice assist, got also injured for the rest of the season. So an absolute nightmare season for Martial. We go again next year, I hope. And lots of people, of course, get him out, he's rubbish. That's the noise that that's every, by the way, I read your tweets and that's what they all sound like in my head.
Yeah.
When the people say that about Martial, that's the noise it makes.
Well, that's right. If only you could do that. Yeah. I mean, you can change the font. So it was always amusing to change, Donald Trump's font to Comic Sans or something in crayon. Just because that was the noise in your head. But yes, it'd be funny if you could do that. Because it is the attitude. Yeah, I always wonder with that kind of get him out. What do you think is going to happen after that? So United are going to go spunk 100 million on the world's best centre forward, right?
That's what they said about Jose, though, so you can't use that argument, because they said, oh, you'd want Jose out, who do you want in? Because literally any other human is sometimes the answer. More on that in the Patreon content. £5 a month. £4 a month to access all literally 25 minutes of Jose Mourinho negative content around Jose Mourinho every single week. The rest of the team selection sort of picked itself, except Baye I would have liked to see. Really poor first half. And then in the second half, it was, a fairly lucky bounce of the ball off the Brighton player fell at Bruno's feet. Bruno with a lovely pass through to Rashford, whose movement was really good, and just an absolutely top draw finish from the brilliant Marcus Rashford.
Yes. God, I'd love him to have a break this summer, wouldn't you? I mean, he's just...
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
We want him to get back to being brilliant, but also getting 30 goals next season or something close to it.
Yeah.
He's certainly capable of it. It adds a few more fox in the box goals and gets himself into simpler shooting positions. As we've seen many, many talented attacking wide/centre-forward players do, that's the next step in Rashford's career, but he's got to get himself fit. Like, constant niggly, it's his foot at the moment he's still suffering with. It's the thing that kept him out of the England setup. He's got that injury against Milan. He's obviously still suffering with it, hobbled off, was hobbling around the pitch. Shoulder, he just needs a break. Unfortunately, he's not going to get it. So he's going to break down at some point next season, you imagine. It seems almost, inevitable.
Yeah, Solskjaer said about Martial, it's always when they go away with international duty. I'm like, is it? Is it, pal? Is it when they go away international duty, or is it when you play them in dead rubbers in the Europa League? Well, I don't know. Maybe that's got something to do with it.
Yeah, it's a worry for the rest of the season, because Cavani's going to have to play everything now, unless they use Rashford up front and Daniel James on the wing.
Greenwood up front.
Could be.
Greenwood through the middle.
Could be if we see
a
bit more.
That's what we want.
But then we'll see a bit more of Daniel James, shinning it into touch. His first touch, by the way, today. Daniel James's first touch. A simple ball into him. He's on the left. Just simple control. Goes under his foot. And it wasn't a first touch, though, was it? Because he didn't touch it. My God!
And then his third, fourth and fifth touches were all fouling Brighton players in really crucial areas late in the game. You could play Amad Diallo.
Yes, well, I'd like to see some of him. And I hope we will see him against Granada on Thursday. I mean, just makes sense. Give him a go. He looks extremely bright and fun, entertaining. And don't we need a bit of that? I don't know if we need any more sort of magic players, the kind of magical tactical thinking that Solskjaer has, which is, I don't have a plan. Hopefully Bruno or Rashford or Martial or someone will come up with it. Anyway, to finish my thought, it is a challenge for the rest of the season. 9 league games, whatever we've got left in the Europa, so it could be another 5, 14. I don't know whether Cavani's body is going to be up to that. We'll see. It hasn't been this season. And, you know, he's going to play more than perhaps we expected him to do. And then to append another thought on top of that, it looks like he's off anyway. So all the noises are that he's not going to be renewing for that extra year. It's not a one-way clause that United normally have. It's a two-way clause. That'll be interesting as well. You know, hopefully his motivation to win his final trophy in Europe is strong.
He seems like the kind of chap who will keep running until bits of him fall off. The substitution today, talking of Dan James's first touch and Diallo, I did think bringing on James in a game where the other team are just sitting back really compact and there's no space in behind felt like a waste of a player on the pitch, really. You know, he could have done something, but whatever. I always feel stupid making a criticism like that, because what do I know? But that was just what I thought when he brought him on, so that's why I'm saying it here.
Yeah, I mean, I think we could, you know, remove most of that analysis and just stick with the feels like a waste of a player on the pitch with Dan James. Sadly. But yes, absolutely right. Ball's not in front of him in space. What's the point? He starts operating at basically championship level.
And then United's two players of the season combined, as Luke Shaw put in an absolutely sick through ball to Bruno Fernandes, who picked out Pogba with a really nice pass across the box. Pogba with a laser-guided, perfect, volleyed cross. obviously, a shanked shot. Mason Greenwood attacked the space really well. They showed it on BT Sport after the game, drew a little circle in the space, and he made a nice loopy run into that space. Van der Beek was also trying to get there. And it was great. Cue much rejoicing. Lovely to see Mason Greenwood back on the score sheet in the Prem. And also, genuinely, I know we joked about this at the top of the show, but there is something really nice about, like, Welbeck, Rashford and Greenwood being the three goal scorers in this game, you know? The Man United Academy is no joke.
No, it absolutely is no joke and has been much strengthened in recent years. And there's, you know, there are more waiting in the wings to have their go, aren't there? You know, Shola Shortire, Anthony Elanga, others. Hannibal has been training with the first team squad. He was training with the players that were left at Carrington while everyone else was on international break. So, you know, plenty of talent wanting to come in, and that may be talent that United to dip into given the financial situation. So, yeah, you had a point.
I wonder what Hannibal Medjugorje made of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's international break haircut-based interview nonsense. If you somehow are lucky enough not to be involved in Manchester United social media in any way and missed this, our absolute reactionary idiot of a manager, as Mulder coach, went to look at a player, saw him coming out of the tunnel and saw he had a Mohican, turned to his coach that he went to see the game with and said, not interested, let's go. Now, this has been described to me in various quarters as just part of Solskjaer's misguided attempt at an Alex Ferguson tribute act. But a man who played with David Beckham and manages Paul Pogba, and also would surely have been misjudged on his own physical appearance all the way through his career, I mean, must know better than to... I mean, what an awful decision to not watch. Just watch him. And then maybe if you hate Mohican so much, like, say, really interested in you. We've got a dress code at the club. You need a haircut. Would you be interested if you have to have your haircut? But no, this absolute OK Boomer Solskjaer is out here making snap judgments on a person's character based on the hair they have. Roy Keane was his teammate. Roy Keane!
Here you go, son. Here's a contract and a pair of clippers. who's the player, by the way?
No idea. They didn't say. It was when he was at Mulder, so it could be anyone.
Could be anyone. I want to know. Be interesting to see if they've turned out any good or not.
Well, Alex Stewart on the TIFO podcast made the really good point that the chances are he got an undue amount of positive attention from scouts for having a haircut that made him stick out. So it's probably why Solskjaer went to watch him in the first place, because he'd caught some scout's eye with his Mohican. So you live by the Mohican, you die by it. But anyway, it just really wound me up because it is so stupid. This would have been in, 2010, 2015 era. Like, what are you doing thinking that a kid with a Mohican must be a bad kid or not a team player or not good for team cohesion or whatever? Like, it's idiotic.
AD Boothroyd levels of dumbness, yeah. Go on.
Yeah, he said it as if he was being super cool and like, yeah, I'm hardcore. I'm like Alex Ferguson. Anyway.
Yes, Dumbo. More like Chris Wilder / Sam Allardyce, I think, there. Anyway, yeah, I got a win. Three points.
Yeah, three good points. On him.
Good on him. Woohoo. Up the Reds.
Well done, Ole.
Up the Reds. Unlike, maybe we'll take a quick break unless there's anything more you want to talk about, and then we can come back and chat about a few other things.
Yeah, let's come back and chat about a few other things after the break. Hello, we're back from the break that was really long, and we had a long break, and now we're back from it.
Ooh, you're rested.
To talk about a few other things. Yeah. Adam McCullough of Stretford Paddock, the artist formerly known as Full Time Devils, doorstepped Ravel Morrison, who was upstairs in the same building giving an interview to Rio Ferdinand, and got a much better interview out of him than Rio Ferdinand did. Absolutely brilliant 45 minutes, well worth your time. Very sad that, obviously Ravel's career is beset with sadness, although he seems very philosophical about it. And he said something beautiful during that interview, which was like, people say I didn't do what I should have done in my career, but I'm a lot better off for having had football in my life than I would have been without it. I'm in a much better place than I would have been without it, which was a nice thing to hear. But he's also a massive Arsenal fan. Kept calling Arsenal we and United you. That's outrageous. But anyway, there we go.
I had to look it up because I just couldn't remember where he is. He's at ADO Den Haag in the Eredivisie in Holland at the moment. Yeah, I mean, he's been all over the place. He looked like he'd had a period of stability playing at Atlas in Mexico for a while.
It was just one season. Loan from Lazio.
Yeah, and
he really wanted to stay there. Apparently, he really wanted to stay, but Lazio wouldn't let him. It's clear that he didn't have any love for Lazio based on how he was treated there.
Didn't have any love for Sheffield United, where he played one game, or Middlesbrough, where he played a handful. So it's been tough for him, and his reputation seems to precede him, at least with certain managers.
It's interesting hearing him talk about Fergie, because there's always been this thing that, Fergie was the last to give up on him. But that's not the story he's telling. I'm not sure that was his experience of it. God love Sir Alex Ferguson, you can't say a bad word about the great man, the indefatigable, what they call the Pope? When he can't do anything wrong. I can't remember what it is. Anyway, that thing is infallible. That's it. Alex Ferguson's infallible. But he isn't half good at putting the spin out that suits Alex Ferguson about literally anything.
He is. Also, the players of experience of Ferguson differs. And in this case, I wonder if Ferguson decided that tough love was the way forward, and tough love or no love. And it ended up being no love. So, two people always have different views of the same event or experience, don't they?
Certainly. This is a film about that. Pretty good Kurosawa movie on that very subject. The Rashomon of watching this Brighton game, I guess, would have been a good game to be at the stadium for, because turnarounds, doesn't really matter how they come, they're always good games to be there. There's going to be fans at stadiums, maybe that will be one of the things that's different about next season.
Well, it looks like it.
Unless, I miss it so bad.
Unless there's a huge new wave, although, with vaccinations rolling out everywhere, then it's positive outlook for next season, isn't it? It looks like Wembley might be up to half full for Euros games, and in a couple of rounds we'll have some fans back at limited capacity, I think up to 10,000, something like that.
Right, great.
And so, yeah, we could well have fans back in Old Trafford before the end of the season. Well, we should have fans back in Old Trafford. Although, everyone thought that was going to happen before Christmas, and it didn't, so...
Yeah, very different circumstances. That time before Christmas was, it didn't really make sense to be doing. It was based on the current R rate and not considering that might make that go up. And now the R rate is obviously a much less important number, because that's the whole point of these vaccinations, is not that they're not really designed to lower the R rate, are they? They're designed to lower the pressure on intensive care units, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We don't need to have that conversation here. But I wanted to say about fans in the stadium, the wraparounds were changed with a big focus on the United Against Racism campaign. What more can we possibly say? But it was nice to see that getting kind of center stage.
Yeah. There was a video and a big new campaign on across all channels. I mean, I have to say, my one reaction to the message that was, and it wasn't the entire message, so I'm going to be a bit reductive and simplify things. But my first reaction to watching the video was, it was saying, "Don't be a racist because look, United have good black players now and in the past." And I'm like, it's kind of simplifying. I mean, don't be a racist because it's the wrong thing is your first message. You don't need to have good black players in your team to not be a racist. Anyway, nitpicking, I suppose.
Especially since the nature of the targeted racism at the moment tends to go in line with performances on the pitch. So... anyway, the whole thing's a disgusting mess, and it was nice to see, as always, this is, of course, I'm looking at it right now because they're doing the Premier League Tonight programme on the telly. And of course, the sponsors' logos are plastered over every single one of those banners, which are definitely going to get in the shot. But, what are you going to do? No ethical consumption under capitalism.
Just a quick word about the women's team.
Tough times.
Yeah, tough times. We talked about them. We haven't really discussed them in depth since the turn of the year, when United went into the new year top of the league. And then a couple of, some injuries. Kristen Press was out for a little while. Tobin Heath is the big one, I think. And it's really blunted the team's attack, and there's been some inconsistent performances. Played at Old Trafford last weekend, beat West Ham, big fuss made about it. It's nice, it's the wrong timing because there's no fans there. It could have come 2 years ago, frankly. And then lost today against Brighton, in which they were pretty toothless, I have to say. And only the top three qualified for the Women's Champions League, so Arsenal have a game in hand. It's not looking good.
Yeah, they've come a very long way in a very short space of time, and obviously the signatures of Press and Heath would have been definitely ahead of schedule and really heavily coronavirus related. So I wonder if this is kind of closer to the season they would have been having under normal circumstances.
Yeah, for sure, and we don't know, but I would imagine that Press and Heath are not going to be staying next season, but we'll see. On that one, I don't think any announcement has been made. Announcements haven't been made, and the women's game transfer market is very, very different. There really aren't a lot of transfer fees floating around. It's more about the contract, and contracts tend to be a lot shorter as well. So there's a good pool of freebies that are typically available, and we'll see how good the scouting network is there. I don't know.
Solskjaer running around going, "Nope, she needs to put her hair in a ponytail or she can't play."
To hear. Did we talk about Nicky Butt since we last had a show?
No, we didn't. No. We talked about all the other shenanigans and them giving a man who is bad at football negotiations the title of director of football negotiations. But Nicky Butt apparently no interest in reporting to John Murtagh, who he is not a fan of.
No, yes. I mean, he has not said anything untoward at all. Nicky Butt just said, I'm looking for a new challenge sort of thing. But yes, it is. I don't know whether leaked is the right word, but, you know, many people close to Nicky Butt are of the opinion that him and Murtagh do not get on.
Yeah. And, it, you know, the timing was kind of interesting. I wonder whether he was asked not to do it at the moment, so it could just be a feel-good story about Fletcher coming back rather than, you know, oh, and also, by the way, class of 92 stalwart Nicky Butt is off to Newcastle again.
Yeah, that's right.
That's what happens to Nicky Butt when he leaves, isn't it?
Team up with Steve Bruce in the championship next season. More on that in the backers' content. I wonder with Nicky Butt, because he was definitely the odd man out in the restructure. It didn't make any sense. This role, which was about bringing players from the academy and the reserve team into the first team, doesn't make sense when you have a technical director and a director of football, because you know, between them, they both have a role in that, you know, on the negotiation side and on the player development side. So, it wasn't that surprising, I'd say, in a sense, but perhaps, you know, doing it during the season it's not a good look.
No, it's just that clearly politics behind the scenes. Nicky Butt, I mean, you know, proper all-time classic United player. I was going to say United legend, which is a weird way of putting it. I mean, he would obviously be described in internal PR as a United legend, but... And you know, he is in a way, because all six of them are. Phil Neville is a United legend in some ways, but, you know, there's levels to these things, isn't there? They're not going to be on the statues.
No. Right. I haven't got any more news. Anything else before we talk about Granada and the Europa League?
No, I mean, I didn't watch any of the international football. I mean, I literally didn't watch a kick of it. I'm sorry about that. I probably should have, but... pandemic football's been getting to me. Yeah, you watched every England game, right?
Really sad. I did. I didn't mean to, because I wouldn't plan to watch any of them, but somehow I was able to do it. So, yes, I watched England. It was San Marino at first. I mean, can't say, like, a team of bus drivers, right? Yeah. It's they're not a team of bus drivers. They're most, I think they're all pros, but playing in some very crappy leagues. Easy victory there. I don't think there was anything notable. Lucho played in that one? No, he played in the Albania game. England-Albania, pretty decent performance away from home against a half-decent side. I think Lucho did play in that one. Marcus Rashford sat them all out. As I said, Harry Maguire scored a goal in England's victory over Poland.
He scored, a turn and volley. Nice goal.
Yeah.
Oh, he played really well today. I meant to say that. Always lining up to have a pop at Aaron Maguire whenever he so much as puts a foot half out of place. And I thought he was really good today. A couple of crucial challenges, no big howlers.
Yeah, no big howlers. Put a hand on Danny Welbeck's shoulder, who crumpled like he'd been shot.
That's what Rennie Meulensteen taught him to do. It's not his fault.
That's right. VAR checked it, didn't think there was anything in it. Yeah, no, he did all right for England as well. John Stones made a big error for Poland's goal. England. It's an easy enough group. They'll qualify for the World Cup, which will ruin absolutely hundreds of footballers and will be the worst thing that's ever happened to football since the last World Cup.
Last World Cup was great.
World Cup was good, but, you know, it was a lovely PR stunt for a repressive regime.
As will be
the next one, and probably the one after that. I think, where's the 26th World Cup's going to be in the US, is it? Or?
No, this was the thing, because it was going to be another fascist regime in charge, because it was Trump that got it. But it's a co-production. It's Canada and the US co-hosting, I believe. Maybe
okay.
Mexico too.
Yeah, I can't remember.
I think it's just Canada.
Canada and the US. Okay, well, yeah. You know, the Canadian Tony Blair's in charge up there. And and we'll see. I mean, Joe Biden will be dead by then, I imagine. He's doing his best before he drops dead to become the next FDR, isn't he? By spending trillions and trillions and trillions, mind-boggling sums of money, which is, you know, quite impressive.
That's what we like. Yeah, so
Granada.
Talking of Tony Blair, the New Deal. Because, you know, you associate that with Tony Blair, not FDR right now. That's anyway, that's very, very 1997 banter, that one. Granada, talking of 1997 banter, Granada. Oh, we're going to be watching ITV, are we, on Thursday night? Is that what channel it's going to be on in the Northwest?
I thought you were going to go on about the car then, but that's more like 1977, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I'm just like very specifically targeting all our listeners from outside of the UK, or maybe even just outside of the Northwest of the UK. So
Granada, yeah, I mean, made it into the Europa League. They're ninth in La Liga at the moment. So, you know, doing all right for a small club. Yeah, stadium's got a capacity of 20,000. This is a small club that is overachieving at the moment. And you have to say it's a very helpful draw for United. I mean, they're probably the weakest team left in the tournament. So,
oh, I hate this.
You hate this.
This is all I've heard. I don't know anything about Granada at all. And this is all I keep hearing is that, oh, no, it's fine. This is a really easy draw. If you want to be utterly terrified about a quarterfinal, have it against a team you know nothing about, and everyone who you believe when they talk about football says, yeah, no, we're definitely better than these. Oh, no.
Yeah, well, you know, they've got the former Spurs player Roberto Soldado in their squad. He's going to be about 90. I'm not sure about that one. I know more about the town, to be honest, than I do about the team. So,
he said there's a nice mosque there.
Alhambra. It's a beautiful right. Town, old town, lovely part of the world. Sadly, I don't think there'll be any travelling fans from Manchester because of, you know, the plague. But yes, it would have been a lovely away day for those who would have been going, but can't. One day.
Yep. I don't know. He'll play a really, really strong team for this one, right? It's because, you know, we are in a position now where we're really going to have to blow it to not qualify for the Champions League just based on other the number of, it's all about permutations at this point, isn't it? It's about the real big specifics that are needed for United not to end up in the Champions League. So he can just play a very strong team. I mean, I wonder if he'll play Bailly. In my very favourite list of predictive, I check this every week, right? 538 now have us at 97% to qualify for the Champions League.
It would take United losing a lot of games and a lot of other teams winning games. But those games that United are losing, it's kind of a double turnaround if they lose them to potential rivals like Spurs, which comes up on Sunday.
Yeah,
you know? It's a small risk, but it's partly a risk.
That's the thing, because then Spurs also have to beat X and Y, and X and Y have to not beat each other, and da 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 da. You know, it's all that malarkey, isn't it? There's not that many points to play for that don't benefit one lot but count against another lot, and you know, all of that.
Yeah, so we'll see. I mean, yes, I tend to agree with you. I think it'll be a reasonably strong side. I think there will be some changes. But look, this is Granada, whose UEFA coefficient ranking is 100 and something, you know. So this is why everyone's saying it's a really weak team. They're ninth in La Liga.
And we're second in the Premier League.
Amazingly, so this is true.
League positions have no bearing on quality of teams, apparently. We've got so many match winners. I think one of the things that I have slight reticence about is we don't seem to have turned up on the big occasion particularly often in the last couple of seasons. But maybe this won't reach big occasion proportions, and it will be the semi-final against a team that we're supposed to beat that we lose. That'll be what happens.
Yes, well, we play the winners of Ajax and Roma in the semi-final. So that's already been made. So Granada lost to Villarreal yesterday, Valencia before that, and Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's Molde in the round of 16, although obviously they were 2-0 up for them first leg. So, a solid victory coming up. Away from home first, and then Old Trafford next week after Spurs.
Right. But it is happening in Spain.
I believe so. Yeah, oh, that's true. Right. I hadn't actually thought about that because a few of those games have happened in weird places, haven't they?
Yeah, they have. We'll see. We don't. It doesn't matter, does it? Let's face it. It'll just whether the players get a chance to see the Alhambra or not. As you can see, I am super enthused by this Europa League preview. I am trying to put my heart into it.
You are very trying, it's true.
I'm just looking in my heart and there's nothing there, Ed. I wish there was something there. I honestly don't care about this game at all. Like, if we lose and get knocked out, oh no, what a shame. We're not going to win the Euro. I know Solskjaer needs a trophy, blah, 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 and it'd be great. But, you know... in a season with no fans in the stadium, and listen, I'm being unnecessarily miserable. Up the Reds, up the ruddy good guys. Let's beat Granada. Let's show those ninth place in La Liga, no good, low down, 100th place in the coefficient slugs. They're not on our level.
Exactly.
Bruno with a hat trick.
All of that.
And yeah.
United whipping out their big todger and slapping it around their faces.
I was just trying to get the show back on the rails from my negativity. Now, I don't know, somehow you've made
it worse. I don't think that was negative. Anyway, this is exactly what Paul would like to do to Sunday manager, Sunday league manager, Sunday league level manager, Jose Mourinho, who's, you know, mighty Spurs will be taking on United on Sunday. So given that we won't be recording a show after Granada, how do you feel about this game, Paul?
All I want is for us to win this game between now and the end of the season. Because if we win this game, by the way, that moves us up at least. We're at 99% your Champions League qualification. So something does matter. But all I want is for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to be patting Jose Mourinho on the head on the touchline at the end of that. If we could overturn the 6-1 aggregate deficit from the first leg this season, that would be ideal. But I will take a spawny 1-0. In fact, I would almost prefer a spawny 1-0 90th minute Bruno Fernandes penalty.
Just for the meltdown that would happen. Jose, who chucked his players under the bus after the draw with Newcastle. More in the backers' content.
Yeah, I'm gearing up to start, but if I speak, I'm in big trouble because I deny the backers. If I speak, I'm in big trouble, so I'm going to wait and speak behind a paywall about this subject. No, but seriously, Tottenham are nowhere near as bad as their worst performances. They will, without question, be hugely up for this. Mourinho will be desperate. If he hasn't lost the dressing room, they'll be fighting for him specifically in this one. This is a massive, massive, massive game for them because, you know, Champions League qualification is a genuine possibility somehow for them, even though there's absolutely no way it should be. It is. And I'm definitely nervous about this game because United haven't looked good since when. I don't even remember the last time United looked good. We won today. We lost just before the international break, didn't we? We lost the Europa League game. We won the Europa League game, but we lost the FA Cup game. It's been a rough couple of months. So a really good performance that, you know, they come out of the blue. The last one was against City, right? When we really needed it on a big stage. Yeah. So
well,
maybe we'll have a
second
bit
half
of that
against
energy.
Milan was good as well. But there's been a lot of dross. There has been a lot of dross. And the results have just about been coming. I mean, Newcastle nearly got 4 on XG today against Spurs. Spurs are surviving on their individuals rather than the team. I mean,
wouldn't know anything about that. Yeah. Oh, I'd hate to support a team that was surviving on individual brilliance rather than collective endeavour.
Harry Kane is having a phenomenal season. I mean, more than one of the stat nerdy type was beginning to write him off because of his sort of increasingly decreasing production. But scoring goals and leading Premier League assists this season. So he has salvaged a season for Spurs, undoubtedly.
Yeah, absolutely. So Will there be enough of that? I mean, what we really hope is that United put them under phenomenal pressure. That's, you know, that's what I really hope anyway, that we're just relentless and attack, and, you know, that's the way to win this game. Try and be on the front foot for most of it. But this is two teams that all, of course, want to be on the back foot. I wonder if we will see a McFred double pivot. If Rashford's half fit, he'll play. But if he's only a quarter fit, we might see Pogba on the left and the McFred double pivot. I don't think that's impossible. I mean, Cavani looked so half-baked today. I'd like to see Greenwood. You could even play Pogba on the right, Rashford on the left, Greenwood through the middle. I doubt that'll happen. I wonder if it'll just be literally the starting 11 from today, actually.
Yeah, yes, more likely than not. Interesting. I mean, because Spurs definitely will play the double pivot, Højbjerg and Ndombele. I'm just going to sit in there. They have a lot of injury problems in the back four at the moment, Spurs. So, you know, I suppose unsurprising they shipped so many goals today when they'd made a lot of changes. Straight up 4-4-2 as well, which is a bit weird from Jose. He's played every formation you can think of this season. Just trying to get something out of this team. And so we'll see. I don't know what the Jose team will be. I mean, I imagine since Son only played half a game that they're trying to get him back fit. Spurs have a Europa League game as well. They do, don't they? They're still in the Europa League, so at least that.
No, they are not.
No, they're out. Oh, God.
Do you not listen to our backers' content, Ed?
Completely forgot. Yeah, completely forgot they are out. Well, that's advantage for them because they're going to have a week off now. A week off to get Son fully fit. He will definitely play, and we'll see who else plays around that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, predictions for these two games then, Ed.
We're going to beat Granada 2-0 and 1-1 against Spurs.
Okay, I'm going to go with... based on everything everyone's been saying to me, I'm going to go 4-0 against Granada. And then Spurs, I'm going to go a 3-1 Man United win.
Woohoo! Up the Reds, right, down the Spurs.
Because I do think there's a chance we'll get the performance that we get in the odd big game. You know, it's a complete roll of the dice, isn't it? You have no idea which way it's going to go, but both of these outcomes are possible. And I'm going to opt to believe that the good one will happen for fun. There you go.
Great. We'll see everyone next week then.
Yes. Sorry about this podcast. I don't know. I'm trying. It's hard. This is this stage of the season. Like, what are you? But we know everything we're ever going to know about this particular iteration of Man United, and we'll just continue to drag our heels, kicking and screaming through the rest of this bleak, miserable, interminable season, where United will somehow finish second and win a trophy. So I don't know what we're complaining about. Imagine how bad this would be if we were actually terrible. Thanks for listening. Patreon backers, stay tuned for the one fun bit of the show. Everyone else, we'll see you next week.
All right, bye now.